Hi, Dan Sheridan here, telling America's story. This is lesson 62 in our series, and in this lesson we're going to talk about Thomas Babington Macaulay's description of the Puritans, or rather, I'm actually going to read it for you. Thomas Babington Macaulay was an English historian. He wrote a great work, multi-volume work, on English history. And his description of the Puritans is very good because it really gives us insight into who these people were. And when we have that insight, it'll help us to better understand them. During the reign of Henry VIII, many of the Puritans took refuge in Switzerland and Germany, where they were well received by the brethren there. Now, some of them returned to England when Elizabeth ascended the throne. However, she had no toleration for their views, and persecution was awaiting them. Now, I'm going to read Thomas Babington Macaulay. The persecution produced its natural effect on them. It found them a sect. It made them a faction. To their hatred of the church was now added hatred of the crown. In 1603, Queen Elizabeth died and was succeeded by James of Scotland. A change to some extent had taken place in the principles and practices of the Puritans. The persecutions which they had undergone had been severe enough to irritate, but had not been severe enough to destroy. They had not been tamed into submission, but baited into savageness and stubbornness. After the fashion of oppressed sects, they mistook their own vindictive feelings for emotions of piety, encouraged in themselves by reading and meditation a disposition to brood over their wrongs. And when they had worked themselves into hating their enemies, they imagined they were only hating the enemies of heaven. In the New Testament, there was little indeed which, even perverted by the most disingenuous exposition, could seem to countenance the indulgence of malevolent passions. But the Old Testament contained the history of a race selected by God to be witnesses of His unity and ministers of His vengeance, and specially commanded by Him to do many things which, if done without His special command, would have been atrocious crimes. In such a history, it was not difficult for fierce and gloomy spirits to find much that might be distorted to suit their wishes. Now, let me just pause here. Macaulay is basically saying here they couldn't find any encouragement in the New Testament to be the way they were, to drum up their anger toward the crown and toward the church. So they distorted the Old Testament to suit their attitudes. All right, let me continue with Macaulay's quote. The extreme Puritans, therefore, began to feel for the Old Testament, which showed itself in all their sentiments and habits. They paid to the Hebrew language a respect which they refused to that tongue which the discourses of Jesus and the epistles of Paul have come down to us. They baptized their children by the names not of Christian saints, but of Hebrew patriarchs and warriors. In defiance of the express and reiterated declarations of Luther and Calvin, they turned the weekly festival into a Jewish Sabbath. They sought for principles of jurisprudence in the Mosaic law and for precedents to guide their ordinary conduct in the books of Judges and Kings. In other words, according to Macaulay, it seems as if they were pretending like they were living in the times of Israel, as if they were Israel themselves. Now, Macaulay continues, their thoughts and discourses ran much on acts which were assuredly not recorded as examples for our imitation. The prophets who hewed in pieces a captive king, the rebel general who gave the blood of a queen to the dogs, the matron who drove the nail into the brain of the fugitive ally who was sleeping under the shadow of her tent. These were proposed models to Christians suffering under the tyranny of princes and prelates. Now imagine that. Stop for a minute and think about that. They were imagining that their struggles were the exact same struggles as Israel of old, and they used examples from the Old Testament that should not be examples for us today, to encourage them. And then Macaulay goes on to describe their morals and manners. Here's what he says. Morals and manners were subjected to a code resembling that of the synagogue when the synagogue was in its worst state. the dress, the deportment, the language, the studies, the amusements of the right sect were regulated on principles resembling those of the Pharisees, who, proud of their washed hands and broad phylacteries, taunted the Redeemer as a Sabbath breaker and a wine bibber. It was a sin to hang garlands on a maypole, to drink a friend's health, to fly a hawk, to hunt a stag, to play a chess, to wear love locks, to put starch into a ruff, to read the Fairy Queen. Rules such as these, rules which would have appeared insupportable to the free and joyous spirit of Luther, and contemptible to the serene and philosophical intellect of Zwingli, threw over all life a more than monastic gloom. So he's saying here, these attitudes, these beliefs, these types of morals made their whole life a monastic type of gloom. It was like an aura that surrounded them. And notice what he says here now. This is how it played out. The Puritan, says Macaulay, was at once known from other men by his gait, his garb, his lank hair, the sour solemnity of his face, the upturned white of his eyes, the nasal twang with which he spoke, and all by this peculiar dialect. He employed on every occasion the imagery and style of Scripture, Hebraisms and metaphors violently introduced into the English language, poetry of a remote age and country, and applied to the common concerns of English life. All right, that was the description of Macaulay, and it should give us some insight into the character of these people. I know it's a little dark, but it helps us understand them and the situation under which they lived. Okay, in our next lesson, we're going to continue with the struggles of these people and what led them to the New World. This is Dan Sheridan. Thanks for listening. Hey, I really hope you learned something. Until our next lesson, remember this. Be good to one another, because we're in this together.